and welcome to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today we have from the Barnes Foundation, we have its Curator of Public Programs, Kathleen Green. Kathleen, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much.
So let's get started right away with, tell us about this fabulous foundation. Tell us about this institution
The Barnes Foundation is a private collection of global art collected by Dr. Barnes over his lifetime, and we moved to the Parkway in 2012. So we've been on the Parkway for about 8 years now. Mm-hmm. And so while we are in our eighth year, we are actually preparing for our centennial celebration in 2022.
Good grief.
Yes.
I didn't realize, because of course you'd been in Barnes' original house museum.
Yeah, the Marion campus.
Yeah, the Marion campus, yep. which is still over there, and you do programming there, don't
yes.
you?
Yes, yes.
And this is a faithful recreation of that property. When you go to the facility on the Parkway, it's like being at the original, but 100 years. Wow.
Well, the collection. The mm-hmm. collection feel, it's within 1/8 of an inch. But the building itself is very different. It still has, for those people who are used to the winding pathway that would lead you into the Marion campus, there are winding walkways now instead of a driveway that still help you to slow down and become meditative before you actually enter the collection. So the same feeling is there, but it's a much bigger building so that we do have performance space. I'm actually the first programmer for the Barnes Foundation. So because of the new space and the new capacity, it's really been an absolute joy to be able to create programs that actually welcome in the Philadelphia and worldwide community.
When I was saying that it looks, you know, like you're in the same old facility, it's faithful to the way the art is hung,
yes.
as Dr. Barnes wanted it to be. Where the doors were, our doors. What the color of the flooring and mm-hmm. the walls and the light is filtered in.
Yeah.
So it's like being in his original layout and his original plan for displaying the art, which was a little bit different.
Yes.
Even 100 years ago, it was a little bit different.
Yes, there are absolutely no signs on the walls. There's no didactics, nothing telling you what to see. But in every single wall, there are what we call ensembles. And that is the same way you have your glasses, your earring, your necklace, and your blouse. He had metalwork, paintings, sculptures, glasswork, all put together to create one ensemble. And he did it through light, line, color, and form. So I always like to think of it as a puzzle, where you go and you see, how do these things relate? How are they different? And there's really absolutely wonderful conversations that you could have about the installations.
It was all to teach us, mm-hmm. wasn't it? It was art appreciation.
Yes. My interpretation of what he would say was that it's about the learning for the masses and how to build conceptual thinking. So anyone of any educational level can go in and start talking about the way these somewhat dissimilar items all relate to each other. How are they similar across the arc of light, line, color, and form?
And he might have an African fetish mask right next to a Modigliani, and it's really interesting the way you see similarities in these things.
Well, during his lifetime, he actually had lectures that spoke about how modernist artists like Modigliani and Picasso, how they actually were inspired by the African art and how they used those shapes. And he was actually introduced to the African art object through learning about these modern artists. So by visiting their studio, he would see these sculptures, which is a wonderful sort of tribute to African art and the inspiration that has come from it.
Well, gee, you just led right into the program, the public programming, because, I mean, Barnes was, he made aspirin or something. You know, he was a patent drug guy who
yep.
made a fortune, and he came to art as a second career. He didn't have an art education. He didn't come from an art background at all. So he was always trying to learn about art himself. And so that's sort of what you're now doing, is teaching us about art and relationships and commonalities and all of that.
Well, what's interesting is my work is really about programming, so performance based. So it's concerts, it's community activations, art activations. And I definitely think of the work that I do as making sure that I am representing a very wide range of artistic practices that also, for me, reflect the diversity that's in the collection. Because again, it's a global collection, all mediums, all eras, like pretty much everything is in there, which is amazing. So I try to represent that through the programming that we do at the Barnes Foundation.
You use those technical terms there, like activation.
Oh, sorry.
What's it?
So
we're going to back it up. What the heck do you do?
Thank you.
Thank
you. What do you do? You're the curator of public programs. So
I create programs at the Barns that invites people to engage with the building in different ways. And sometimes it's with the collection. But most of what I do is I put on concerts. I invite poets and aerial artists and Chinese shadow puppet dancers and a little bit of everyone of all different backgrounds to come and present their work at the Barns Foundation. And again, the goal is to, for me, it's always been to make sure that the diversity of what is in the collection is happening performance-wise in the court. And we're actively doing that. And one of the examples is Artist Bash on February 14th. Artist Bash is a program that literally celebrates performance-based artists underneath a playful umbrella theme. The theme for February 14th is To Die For. It's Valentine's Day. We're celebrating a wide range of cultural and music traditions that people love so much they'd, in theory, die for. And so we're making sure we're bringing in a Grateful Dead tribute band because that just makes sense. And then we also have Wawa Zhang, who's a Chinese shadow puppet artist, who is doing a series of pieces that talk about memory and love and loss. We have Maybelline Diorio, who is a drag queen, who will be singing a song about love and loss. We have Obun, which is a Chinese a processional tradition that is about the loved of those who are gone. And same with a Calaca Flaca, which it means the skinny skeleton, which is again, is a Mexican Day of the Dead, the celebration of people who were lost and paying homage to those who have come before us. So we love to show cultural diversity through the programming. And Artist Bash is actually a program that is built through community programming. We have four community and culture partners who are an active part of helping to select the programming, to sort of curate it along with myself. And it's been a wonderful three-year partnership thus far.
When you say is poets and shadow puppets and skeletons and all of this, I'm thinking, okay, when Barnes hung a Picasso next to a Cezanne, he would put a pitchfork in the middle of the whole mess. And so that's sort of, you're doing it in more spatial representation here. These things are coming in just to be counter to the flat images on the wall.
Yeah, I find it absolutely joyful. And the nice thing is that we have it at a $10 price point. So absolutely everyone from college students to senior citizens could be a part of it. And literally the audience is 21 through 70 plus year olds. And of those audience members, we usually have about 650 people in attendance. The majority of them actually go in the collection because they are arts and culture crowd. And that's what they want is they want to explore the collection, be a part of the programming, and then be with like-minded people. So it's a wonderful, wonderful program.
So if you go to, you know, To Die For, the Artist Bash To Die For, you know, a lot of singles are going to be showing up for that. That's kind of sad. when you go there, you get to see the exhibits as well.
100%.
So you really are, the building is one of the things that's one of the performers that day.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt, yes. And that's part of the joy of it is, again, making sure that absolutely everyone has multiple ways of accessing the collection. So it's been an absolute joy seeing the program evolve, seeing the partnerships evolve, and learning more and more that sort of the deeper you get into the Philadelphia creative and performance community, the more you realize that there are like additional communities that you've yet to dive into, which is absolutely wonderful.
Now, you've been here about 3 years with the Barns.
I've been at the Barns 8 years.
Oh, 8 years?
Yeah.
3 years doing this particular thing. Are you a Philadelphian?
I am of the suburbs, but as an adult, my career has been, I'd say 90% of it in Philly. So Philly feels like home for me, without a doubt.
Just that sense of wonderment at our diverse community.
Yes.
And
it's fabulous.
It is. It's absolutely fabulous. And it's wonderful when you find a spot that likes to bring all of these really diverse ideas and ways of presenting art together in one space.
Yes. Well, one of the programs that I'm really excited about is our First Sunday program. And that is, the formal name is PICO Free First Sunday Family Day, but we call it short PICO Sundays. But that is every first Sunday of the month. It's absolutely free to enter the building, to enter any of the collection, any traveling exhibition we have. And then we also program the entire day. And that has been a program we've been doing in partnership with PICO since we opened our doors. And we, on average, have about 2,000 people coming to participate in the day, everything from story time to hands-on art classes to performances. It's it's an absolute wonder to see the activity and the engagement that's happening. Panel discussions, sometimes film screenings, a little bit of everything occurs on the first Sunday of every month, and it's fabulous.
It's kind of funny that he always wanted his art to be seen, not by snobby art critics.
It is true.
And or art buyers and fans.
Yes.
And when you opened, I remember they had a collection of his notes, and they had one whole counter of nothing but the notes he had written.
Yes.
To people saying, no, you are not allowed to come and see my art. And for various reasons, he'd get honked off and say, yep. No, too snobby. They're not coming. No soup. And it was just fascinating to see that. And he always said, well, he wanted to have more everyday folk see and enjoy this amazing collection. Yet it was very difficult to see and limited in numbers. So with things like Art Bash, $10 a ticket, and you get performance art, etc., and a network opportunity to meet great people. Mm-hmm. But the Pico-Free Sundays, it's amazing to see families, but all ages, everybody lined up waiting to get a ticket to come in and get to enjoy this art for free.
Yes. Yeah. There are many wonderful things about that the experience of Pico Sunday. One is that it's a great way for the Barnes to introduce ourselves to other performance communities, civic educational communities, to start building larger partnerships. And a lot of the people who first connect with us through Pico end up branching into other partnerships with us. But it's also a way for us to introduce ourselves to them, so it's the mutual experience. And we have through our family and community-based programs, we actually have art hubs out in the community. There's one in West Philly that's called Lola 38. And we actually have a shuttle bus that brings people from our community hub out in West Philly to the Barnes. It's a wonderful relationship where we are starting to build or continuing to build and sustain those relationships in different pockets of the community, and making sure that we're not only bringing them into the Barnes Foundation, but also spotlighting them, having them be the performers, having them to be the art educator who does the hands-on programming. And it's been wonderful to start being able to sustain those relationships also.
We're almost at the halfway point, so I'm just going to go ahead and say that you are listening to Focus on the Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today we are talking to Kathleen Green. She's the curator of public programs for the Barnes Foundation. And if you'd like more information about what we're talking about, whether it's a schedule of events such as an Artist Bash coming up on February 14th to die for, jeez, you'll find it at barnesfoundation.org. That's barnesfoundation.org. You'll also find their hours, how to visit, more information about the Pico Free Sundays, and information about all the other programming that you have. And you want to celebrate the fabulous building right now for a minute there. I've been to the auditorium, saw a presentation there. But this building allows you to invite people in for discussion and for classroom events and things.
Yeah, no, the building is absolutely magical, and it's made so that it's this peaceful, tranquil place where there's subtle texture shifts, just so that it's very quiet and calming, so that when you go into the collection that's Florida ceiling artwork, that there's a space to go to again where you can have quiet visual space. But there is, of course, the auditorium, there are classrooms, and then there's, of course, the 23 galleries of the actual collection. It's a magical space. And of course, the terrace is one of the beautiful outdoor spaces where you feel like you could be anywhere.
We haven't really touched upon the collection, and we really do need to. Could you just give us an overview of what one finds when you go to the Barnes?
Inside the collection, there are 23 galleries that Dr. Barnes has put paintings, sculptures, African artifacts, little glass pieces, ceramic pieces all together to create ensembles. And the installations are, again, I think of them very much as being puzzles, so that you can sit and discuss how do they relate to each other, how do they not relate to them. During his time, he actually put them together, not knowing that these artists were going to become as major as they are. But we actually have the most Cezannes and Renoirs than there are anywhere in Paris, or anywhere in France, which is amazing. So his collection was definitely ahead of his time for the major impressionist artists of his time.
He does have the unusual artists. The Picasso and the Cezannes, obviously, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he has collections of artists that I was introduced to because of the Barnes collection. he collected before any other museum mm-hmm. was collecting. And it's wonderful. But also, he collected women. There were, including, well, you just had the big exhibit last year, the Berta Morisot right. exhibit. And you got another one coming up. And this one is... It's a fashion. She was in fashion?
Well, she was an entrepreneur. And so she was not a, she did not create artwork. She helped to bring the textiles back into Parisian favor. And she did it through textiles and fashion. But she was sort of the brains behind bringing this art form back to favor, which is amazing given the era and just how... I don't know. As a female, I think about how far we've come, but how far we still have to go.
So we've got an exhibit coming up, and it's Marie Cottoli.
Cottoli.
Mm-hmm. Cottoli, the modern thread from Miro to Man Ray. And that's going to be opening...
February 23rd through May 10th. So we have a lot of exhibitions coming up, or a lot of programming coming up that ties very specifically into female entrepreneurs and also into textiles. So we're excited to be able to celebrate her work and are very excited to have it here.
And then coming up even later, you've got Elijah Pierce, a wood carver, coming up. So it's all about the texture, isn't it? Because those rusty hinges and the masks and all of that are more tactile exhibits of what's on the walls.
As far as relating to Elijah Pierce?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I also think it ties into the Egyptian hieroglyphics because he carved pieces that were like three images to one frame. So sort of like a comic book. And so that there's additional history that's in there that that ties in thematically with what his work is. He did a lot of biblical pieces. He did a lot of animal carvings. So there'll be a lot of really fun ways to tie into his work also.
So this is also someone who was self-taught. He was a barber.
Yes, he's a barber by trade and a preacher by passion. And a lot of his work, he was a whittler. And he would he'd carve a lot of animals, a lot of biblical scenes, a lot of what he was happening politically in his life. He has a piece about JFK's murder and about Martin Luther King. The range of what he was depicting in his work is just really amazing. The fact that it specifically reflects his life and what was happening on the radio, on the news, and around him, it's going to be a wonderful exhibition in order to relate to not only what's happening now around depicting current social, economic, and political life, but allowing the freedom and the openness of the barbershop culture, being able to bring that into the barns is going to be a really fun way to be able to program and speak to the exhibition.
So in February, you've got threads beginning. And then come summer in June, you've got a barber shop, you know, a barber wood carvings.
Yes.
And then you have all of this amazing impressionist and really and cubist, etc. You've got all of this art on the wall. How do you get us to understand the connections between them?
Right.
Yeah. How do you teach a layperson like me to make the right connections and get the deeper meaning behind what I'm seeing?
I think that is what our chief curator's job will be. And there will be a ton of, obviously, dididactics and signage and in some cases some books that will tie into that. But the reality is that Marie Cottoli brought textiles back into fashion. We have textiles in the collection. And we also have some of the pieces that she commissioned. So she commissioned Picasso. That piece is in the collection. She also did that with Moreau, and that piece is part of Dr. Barnes's collection. So they were peers. They knew each other. And so this will be telling that part of, I guess, Dr. Barnes's history as it relates to her. But her story is going to be told as a entrepreneur of her time, stepping into a all-male industry to make room for her vision and her experience to bring that back to life. With Elijah Pierce, Dr. Barnes had a very strong connection with the Black community during his lifetime, both with Aaron Douglas and Charles S. Johnson. And of course, the one African-American that is in the collection also worked in wood. And that's Horace Pippin.
I didn't know Horace Pippin did wood.
Yeah, well, there are wooden pieces where he would brand them. And so there's, I'm not saying specifically that Elijah Pierce like reflects with Horace, mm-hmm. but they're both self-taught. He very specifically, Elijah Pierce, worked with wood and whittled, and that's how he was carving his pieces and then painting them, whereas Horace Pippin had a very different process. But the connections are definitely there, and we are diving into and starting to call out the relationship Dr. Barnes had with the African-American cultural community of his time, which is amazing and really exciting to be able to help to bring that out to the public.
But there are tours and talks.
Always.
And I'm going to guess you have, you'll have performances that will tie all of this together.
Yeah, we are, we're still working on some of the details, especially around Elijah Pierce, but we have some really wonderful possibilities that are already percolating. And with Marie Cotoli, we have, again, wonderful talks that tie into female entrepreneurs and different examples of sort of what is happening now within the Philadelphia community. And all of those programs will be on the website, sort of listed so that for people to be able to preview, and we hope to see everyone there.
And, you know, I've spent so much time, though, talking about Sunday. Fridays.
Yes.
Fridays are fun there, too, right?
Every first Friday, we have a concert, and it changes every month what the theme is, and it ties into a opportunity for people to gather, to explore the collection with a cash bar. And March 6th, we are very fortunate to have the Black Pearl Chamber Orchestra here with Jerry Lynn Johnson. They are closing out their 10th anniversary for having Black Pearl Chamber Orchestra in existence, so we are very honored to be able to be a part of their 10th year anniversary. In April, we are partnering with Orchestra 2001, who is a very playful group that I always enjoy partnering with. And they are doing a piece called Unhinged. And that's where they're actually going to be using metalwork that reflects pieces in the collection to create a musical orchestra, a piece. I cannot wait to see the evolution of that because they are so amazingly playful. So that will be April. And we're very excited by the suite of programs coming out. In May, we're partnering with Japan Philly 2020 as they celebrate the 2020 calendar year. And we are still locking into who that performer will be. But there are some really wonderful opportunities that are being sort of batted about.
Kim's been in from the Japan America Society.
Yes.
And she alluded to that. In fact, she'll be in April to talk about that.
Wonderful. That's perfect.
So we'll have a little tie-in there.
We'll talk
about that.
I love it.
It all just keeps coming back around when you're in Philadelphia. And so all these great opportunities, these are opportunities too to get in there in the evening and network and meet with other people.
Right. And so the nice thing is that all of our programs have very different sort of segments of the Philadelphia population, but the goal is to make sure that we have an opportunity for everyone to get involved and to be a part of not only the programming, but definitely the exhibition, whether it's the traveling exhibition that's coming or the permanent collection. So we're very excited by the many opportunities to connect in with everyone.
Okay, so now you have tours, et cetera, but, you know, as a member of the Barnes, do you get special exhibits or special opportunities to see the art or to learn about it?
Definitely. There are multiple opportunities. Lectures, our core lectures are free for members. There are a number of programs, including the First Friday series, where there are reduced ticket prices specifically for members. And then, of course, there are select events that are exclusively for members to be able to learn more about upcoming exhibitions, to sort of get an inside scoop on what's happening at the Barnes Foundation. So we definitely make sure to keep members informed as best as possible about what's coming, what is currently here, and hear back from them what they're interested in.
While we're talking about membership and all of that, I am a student, or I am a school, special programming or anything offering for us?
If you, with a valid ID, you can enter and visit the collection for $5. We actually, for our First Friday program, with a valid ID, we have $10 admission for any First Friday concert with ID on site. And then, of course, we have a lot of K-12 programming that is in partnership with the school district. So that has been wonderful, just seeing so many students coming in and out with their classmates, being a part of the collection and learning more about it.
Well, that was one of the purposes of the new facility,
Most
wasn't
definitely.
It?
Definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, we're very, very excited by the exchange and the partnership and the growth of that program.
Okay, I'm going to guess that obviously we can find out more information about membership at your website. When are you open?
We are open Wednesday through Monday from 11 until 5.
And you're right there on the parkway.
Yes. Yep. Right next to the Rodin, easy walking distance.
Hey, you know what? 2-minute warning. What's coming up? What's on the horizon, actually, coming up?
I think the big thing coming up for us is with the Elijah Pierce exhibition. We are very excited to be partnering with Wild Welcome America, and we will have our first Friday in July will be an open house for Elijah Pierce. So I know Wawa Welcome America will have a ton of activation, a ton of different things happening on the parkway. And we are excited to be partnering with them to ensuring that everyone who wants to have access to the collection and Elijah Pierce will be able to do so on that day at no cost.
Oh, that's great. So your opportunities here, first Sundays, and in July, it will be the first.
It'll be July 3rd.
The first Friday will be a free opportunity as well.
Yes.
And of course, for the rest of the time, we can find out more information about membership. We can find out more about, the Artist Bash on February 14th, Valentine's evening, which is this is a Friday as well. Mm-hmm. $10 ticket. You can't beat that with a stick. And then you've got great exhibits coming up, Marie Cottoli, and then coming up in the summer, Elijah Pierce. A fabulous collection, and then great exhibits coming up just to augment it all. And you can find out more information about how to take a tour, how to visit. All of this information is found at barnesfoundation.org. That's barnesfoundation.org, real simple. And here's where I say thank you to Kathleen Green. She's the curator of public programs there. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I'm looking forward to that bash. $10. You can't beat that. I'm not kidding. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been Focus on the Delaware Valley.